The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
The story of the UK is an economy that has got real momentum.
What is broken can be repaired. What is ruined can be rebuilt.
UK inflation is becoming much more homegrown.
We have huge potential as an economy in the UK.
This is a time to tell Israel there is a path to peace.
Our plan for the British economy is working, but the work is not done.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. Caroline, were you instantly online looking for cheap flights for the 2nd of May yesterday?
I was.
Booked that bank holiday weekend away.
Exactly. The place card holder has gone. No, look, there has been a bit of anxiety amongst political journalists. Which month is it going to be? Mm. When do I book my holiday? But look, we get to Friday and Rishi Sunak officially ruling out that early May election. The question is now, what happens for the rest of the year? But look, here he is, the Prime Minister, speaking to ITV News.
We've got elections for police and crime commissioners, for local councils, for mayors across the country. They're important elections.
And not a general election.
That's what I'm focused on. There won't be a general election on that day. Yeah. But when there is a general election, what matters is the choice.
Yeah, good point. I mean, shouldn't be booking flights anyway, because we're going to be all watching things like the London mayoral election that will be happening on the 2nd of May. But Labour says this is Rishi Sunak running scared. Their social media accounts have been busy superimposing pictures of the Prime Minister onto the body of a chicken. And it does make you wonder what the Tories' plan is here when it comes to the timing this election right.
Yeah, and also, you know, let's take a step back. Sunak has repeatedly said that his working assumption is a general election in the second half of 2024. But the kind of failure to rule out a May vote had sort of got the rumour mill spinning. And it's also simply because the timing looks so amazingly difficult. 16 months since Sunak became Prime Minister, and he's under such enormous pressure. I mean, economically, as you and I talk about all the time in terms of the UK, but also because cabinet ministers are going. Another one, they've held private discussions looking at the possibility that the party could force Sunak out. And then also you've got the armed forces minister, the latest desertion, saying that he's going to leave.
Yeah, that's right. The Times reporting that James Heapey is going to step down. That would make more than 60 now sitting Conservative MPs who are going to stand down at the next election.
So if it's not the 2nd of May, when will the general election be called? Our UK government editor, Stuart Biggs, is probably the perfect person to try to answer that question. Stuart, great to have you in the studio. What do you think then is most likely in terms of the month? Should we even be playing this game? Anyway, answer the question first, maybe.
You know, we're still in the realm of theories. The intel that we're getting out of Downing Street is there isn't actually a specific timeline for this yet. The two obvious places to look, I think, are in the autumn, which is obviously what the Prime Minister has said, you know, second half of 2024. There's some rationale for that is if you look at economic projections, the picture is going to look better in terms of interest rates and inflation. And the Conservative argument would be at that point that the economy has turned the corner. And that becomes a sounder basis for an election campaign. There's also speculation that there could be another what they call an autumn statement, so fiscal intervention, maybe another tax cut right before an election campaign. Mm-hmm. The alternative theory, I would say, is not May the 2nd, obviously, because that's been ruled out, but not so long after that, so maybe June, July. And the thinking around that theory is to do with, actually, it's very much focused on the Rwanda flights and the idea that the government could get some of these, deportation policy sort of up and running. And that, you know, there's a theory, especially on the right of the Conservative Party, that would be a sort of vote shifter in a campaign.
What about, though, if you know, the local elections aren't expected to go particularly well for the Conservatives? I mean, that surely might put the kibosh on anything too soon afterwards.
Yeah, and I think the polls being the way they are, and with the, you know, we're sort of looking at relatively unprecedented gap between the Tories and the Labour. So when if you frame the question around, you know, when's a good time to go, it's actually very difficult. It's a difficult thing to come up with, because obviously there's going to be counter arguments at any point. It's hard to get past the sort of prime ministers hold on generally, and they think about things differently. So Sunak has a moment in the autumn when he'll have done 2 years in the job, and you know that doesn't mean much to voters, but to the party and to the prime minister and to the cabinet, that means, you know, that's a different way of looking at these things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That might also be one perspective. The other problem, though, and we've reported on this and been thinking about it too, and the Times has a fresh report out today about the Defence Minister James Heapy being about to step down. Also, the problems within the party are so evident. It's kind of about trying to keep this very fractured body of MPs together, whilst, you know, quite a lot of them, more than 60, are now saying they're not going to stand.
Yeah, and it appears as though there's almost a strategy not to do it in a rush. It almost feels as though it's sort of dribs and drabs between now and the election, because actually the assumption there that the numbers are going to be so sort of big and embarrassing that would in itself act as a drag on the polls. I mean, you know, this week we've seen, Bloomberg reported on Thursday, you know, cabinet, there's already discussions amongst senior ministers about whether Sunak can actually get through to an election, that such is the sort of level of discontent with the direction he's taken the party, but also the fact that these polls just haven't moved for so long. And it does appear as though those kind of discussions and that kind of rumour and speculation is partly why the Prime Minister came out and explicitly ruled out May the 2nd, because it just the information void around having an election date was, in a sense, fueling even more sort of unrest. And he hasn't gone so far as to put an end to, you know, the debate, but ruling out that first potential moment when an election could be probably has helped him to a degree.
Okay, helped him a little bit. Yes, in the face of, for example, the letter from James Heapy talking about, you know, wanting to leave and not standing in the next general election in order to prioritise his family and to pursue a different career. That's quite something.
There's quite a few different careers being sought out.
Being examined by various players. Stuart Biggs, our UK government editor, thank you very much for joining us.
It's an immensely difficult moment, isn't it, for the Prime Minister? I mean, next week you've got to think that the Bank of England rate decision is happening. You know, how quickly are those terrible interest rates, high interest rates if you're a borrower, going to come down? How much is the economy going to turn? And is it going to be an election fought just on the economy or on all of these other issues that we've talked about this week?
Well, let's think a little bit more closely about the Tory party strategy after the week that was, but also with the long road ahead now that we know for the election. Joining us to discuss is Gavin McGaw, President and Managing Director of the communications company Hanover. He's also previously worked as a press officer for the Conservative Party. Gavin, great to have you back with us on the programme. How big of a mess has this week been for Rishi Sunak?
Well, I think it's not just this week that's been a bit of a mess. It's pretty much his whole time as prime minister. There's been no coherent strategy at all. And this week symbolizes that. There's been loads of expectation and management needed to be done in terms of when an election will take place. I know from personal conversations that many of the big beasts of the party have been going in to see him to warn him off a May election. Now, I wouldn't still rule out there being an election in an earlier time frame than people think, but it's been a very difficult week for him, and he just cannot make his messages land around the economy because the party is falling apart, whether it's fundraising, whether it's the likes of Lee Anderson going to reform. It's not an easy time for him.
From the communications standpoint, should the Conservatives have committed to giving the donations from Frank Hester back after the details of his remarks about Diane Abbott, you know, have been reported for days?
Absolutely. And it's not just a communication strategy to do that in the right way. It's a leadership issue, this. You have to show strength and leadership in doing the right thing. And that's been the problem. I think Rishi Sunak is, as many people in the party say, a good prime minister, but he's also a terrible politician, is what they say. And that's part of the problem here. He's got to be a stronger leader, and he seems to be flip-flopping around, you know, making Lee Anderson a deputy chair of the party was a mistake as well. And no one can really get the true Rishi Sunak, I think, because of this. He's being forced into looking behind him at every single juncture to see what his party wants. And that's the wrong way to lead. You've got to be clear on leadership, and you've got to create the direction of travel rather than listen to what others want.
Is it too late for him to claw that back? Can he reassert himself before an election campaign?
I know that lots of the people who've been to see him this week have told him it is not too late and he can claw it back. Now, I think that's a nonsense. I think he doesn't believe it either, but he has to believe in something. And that means there must be some hope there, if he's going to go on for the next 6 months or so, that they can at least turn it round. The question is how they turn that round. I think you'll see a massive and very expensive digital marketing campaign, segmenting the voter electorate and trying to target them with specific mentions of things like immigration, health, depending on what they need to get into them on. Alongside that, their biggest strategy, though, is hope that either the Labour Party fall apart or that something big will happen in the world, something seismic, which will lead to the electorate thinking differently. And I think that's a very dangerous strategy. I'm not sure it's going to work either because of the mess we've seen, not just from this government, but from the previous Conservative governments, particularly those of Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. And that's why I'm so surprised they didn't go with an earlier election, because if you're a strategist looking at this, you know that the Labour Party are in a bit of a mess in terms of creating their manifesto. And that gives the Tory party hope that there will be some mistakes made in the manifesto that they can focus on in an election. It's never going to be enough. They are doomed, but at least it could help change the narrative a bit. And they've not taken that at this stage.
I just want to pause on the issue of racism, though. You know, there's also the Israel-Hamas issue. Do our leading politicians have a problem talking about race?
I think some of them do when they're trapped by their own party on these things, and that's not good enough. It's unacceptable. And it comes back to what I was saying about strong leadership. A good leader here, a strong leader, would not allow a donor to have said what they've said and then have seen a day of arguments over whether it was racist or not. They would have been out ahead of that saying it was racist, it was unacceptable, and we're giving the money back. But this is someone who's trapped. He needs the money to try and have any chance of winning the election. That is unacceptable, but it is the reality. We saw the same issue with Lee Anderson over Sadiq Khan and his comments around the Islamists so-called running London, which were complete nonsense, as we all know, and were designed to get headlines. But it should have been a quicker response and a clear response. I have no idea why he's not used these as an opportunity to step up and show strength of leadership. I think the fact he hasn't shows how precarious things might be.
Is that worrying how worrying is it for putting Rishi Sunak at the forefront of an election campaign? If he has this leadership problem, does he have an integrity problem as well?
When this is the irony, I think people who know Rishi Sunak says he hasn't when he's talking about the things he believes in and these issues in private, but he has a problem as the front man for the Conservative Party. But the hope would be, though, in an election campaign, people do tend to come together and fight together as one. And that's why I'm slightly surprised he's not gone earlier, because an election campaign is his chance to do that. It is the one way to unite the party. Now, it will lead to defeat, but it is a coming together. Now, this is the big problem for him. Can he get to an election later in the year? That's why I don't discount June still, but we are might be looking at October, November, or even January as a future date. And that is a strategy that is dangerous for him, because he has to get that far, and he has to hope that something else happens in the world to try and make the Conservative Party look more like an electoral body that people can back.
What about a key policy win? Could that turn things around? For example, how important would it be for Rwanda flights to take off before an election?
Again, it's not a policy I'm a massive fan of, but it would be important to actually signal that they have a plan that could work going forward. We all know it's a nonsense, though. It's costing millions of pounds per person who are going to be on those flights. And during a campaign, that will be played out. But they will use digital marketing to try to show that that is happening. And it will have an impact with a very small number of people in reality, even though people say it's a massive issue for voters. A lot of those people think it's a massive issue because this government has failed and the numbers have gone up. So it's a really complex one for Rishi and his team. He will hope it has a positive effect, and I'm sure it would with certain parts of the electorate, but it's not enough. Let's be frank. You know, this is the Conservative Party that's been in government for so long, and the numbers have gone up. So the people who care about those things, look at that. And that's why Reform are someone that the Conservative Party are so worried about, because they will come from it as a, you need change.
You've talked a lot about digital market spend, which I think is quite interesting. We've already seen Conservatives like Liz Truss borrowing from the conspiracy theories of the US. You know, the deep state comments, for example. Are we going to see a lot more of that kind of coming into the political discourse in the UK?
I think we'll see things which go very close to the bone. They won't go as far as being conspiracy theories, but they will certainly play into popular opinion and populist agendas, because that is the only way they can make things stick. But again, they're just narrowing down the amount of people who will actually accept that sort of message. And I think that's the danger. I think you'll see Keir Starmer try and rise above it and actually flag it as people seeking to take down the democratic political system we have by not being as open and honest with the electorate as they should be. It's going to be a very interesting election campaign, though, but a lot of it's going to be fought over the likes of social media and direct messaging and other digital tools.
Just from the Labour point of view, is it an advantage or a disadvantage them to have this extra time before the election if we're not going to get one in May?
Well, it's the same sort of situation for them. They are always worried about what could go wrong in the Labour Party. So everyone's sort of in that nervous situation of just wanting an election, really. Now, it gives them more time to sort out their manifesto, which I think will be quite a short manifesto to avoid putting any landmines in that can blow up in their faces during the campaign. But they also have to keep the party together, because they have similar issues to the Tory party. They've got a far left, which is still there and can get upset over issues. Just look at the Gaza backlash that we've seen for Keir Starmer. So lots of issues there. I do think, though, Keir Starmer is doing a lot of work behind the scenes, and the senior team are doing a lot of work behind the scenes to try and plan not only for the campaign, but for what they would do in government. And that's another conversation. Do they go very early on with big announcements, or do they actually take a moment to take time to showcase how bad things are going to be? Because this election is going to be a hospital pass election. It's going to be a terrible one to win. And the question is whether you can rush in with policies, or whether you actually take your time to showcase how bad things are and to try and put in commissions which allow cross-party viewpoints on big issues like health, defence, immigration, other things which haven't been solved for decades as people get tactical for newspaper headlines. And this is the time for change. And the question is whether he is going to be in a position to do that or not once an election campaign is over.
Gavin, very interesting. Thank you so much for being with us. Gavin McGaw is the President and Managing Director of the communications company Hanover. So there you have it, the difficult position of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, indeed. And thinking about that as well, the challenges facing the Conservative Party, but the challenges on the political landscape in general. We've been speaking to our Bloomberg opinion columnist, Adrian Wooldridge, about how some Labour mundanity could work in their favour. He's also had some ideas about how the next government could bring a revival of private finance initiatives. We've been speaking to him about how Keir Starmer's party could bring the UK the calm it needs. Take a listen.
Labour is leading by this extraordinary number of 27 points. And that's not just a freak. Labour has been leading for many, many months. And there are many reasons for that. One is that Labour seems to embody a certain set of values, a certain stability, which people find attractive. But the other, and perhaps even more important reason, is that the Tory party is in chaos and people do not like to see chaos. So one of the strange things that's happening now is that the Labour Party, that the Tory party is the natural party of business. Business sort of instinctively feels that the Tory party is on its side. And that's no longer the case. The Conservative Party has thoroughly alienated business, partly through Brexit, which has reduced the growth rate of the economy and made trade more complicated, but partly just through a general process of chaos. You know, it's hard to plan ahead, it's hard to think ahead, it's hard to do anything. So then going to Labour Party because they're being forced to.
Aren't the Labour Party really just pushing an open door, though, really?
Absolutely.
I mean, business is looking pretty pragmatically at them and saying, well, they look like they're going to be in charge pretty soon. We should make friends.
Absolutely so. What we're not seeing at the moment is a sort of romance, as you did between Tony Blair and the business world, because Tony Blair was a very, very pro-business prime minister. And it was a very sort of pro-business time. It was the time of the third way. It was the time of sort of the Clinton presidency and things like that. People looked to a future which would be defined by social liberalism and economic liberalism. Now is a very, very different time. And it's a different Labour Party. You know, Keir Starmer is somebody whose background is in the law, in human rights. His party is rooted in NGOs, in professional politicians, in the trade unions. You know, it's not instinctively a pro-business party, but it's more pro-business, you know, in practice, I think, than the Tory party is at the moment.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting because, you know, we speak to MPs all the time. Many of them have a background in the city, in finance, in some other kind of business. And you point out in the piece that you've written most recently that actually that's not really the case for a lot of Labour MPs. So there's a real get-to-know-you vibe going on, and we've reported on that a lot. But the other thing that is that does now dominate, that I do think is quite different, is the agreement generally, business, politicians, everybody, that the UK desperately needs more growth.
Absolutely. And it's true that that's right across the parties, because Liz Truss, you know, disaster that she was, did rightly say that we need more growth. Everybody says that we need more growth. But I think if you're looking for growth, at the moment I would look more to Labour than the Tories, because the Tories seem to be incapable of offering political stability because they're fighting about what Toryism means and what the future means. Labour does seem to be a more stable party for the moment, and business can't plan, it can't think ahead, it can't do anything without stability. So stability is the clue, the key to growth at the moment.
Does the Labour Party need to worry, though, about being accused of selling out to business? I mean, it's obviously the party's transformed under Keir Starmer from the leadership of Jeremy Corbyn, but do they risk alienating some of their more traditional supporters by being seen as cozying up to business?
Well, it's a much more difficult politics than it was in the late 1990s. In the late 1990s, there was a sense that business meant modernity and that we could all unite behind a sort of modern business-orientated future. Since the financial crisis, people are much more sceptical about business, particularly finance, and the swing constituency in this country really are working-class voters in the north who are traditionally trade unionists, have traditionally been very suspicious of business. So Keir Starmer can't go too far in sort of embracing business, but what he has to say is that we're all in this mess together and we all have to pull out of it together. That requires stability and it requires people working across social and class divides, I think. So not, you know, business is wonderful, let it do what it wants, but we all need some sort of framework of growth.
How difficult do you think it is going to be then for Labour to deliver? Because some say that actually it is the Labour Party that's going to be best at reforming things like the NHS, which again, there is wide consensus that people in the UK like the NHS, want the NHS to perform better. And yet, how does one deliver that with the kind of fiscal constraints that we have? There's going to be huge pressures on Labour to deliver.
Massively difficult to deliver this sort of thing because there just isn't any money. There was a time when Labour was thinking about having this investment of $28 billion a year in the green economy, and suddenly it's pulled back on that. And the person who really is shaping our politics at the moment, strangely enough, or particularly for the Labour Party, is Liz Truss. Because what Liz Truss did was two things. One was raise the cost of borrowing, which is enormously constraining on governments. And the second is to emphasise the fragility of Britain's position within the global financial system, that if you do something that's ill thought out and the markets take against, you can, you know, your economy can collapse very quickly. And I think that's completely changed the psychology of the Labour Party from a party that sort of was thinking about Securenomics and Bidenomics and moving to a new era of government investment and government-driven growth to one that's much more cautious. Now, in this cautious world, the one thing you can really offer is stability, as I've said, but also planning reform. Everything is incredibly difficult to do in this country. Infrastructure projects are bogged down for years and years and years because we have a slow and very fragmented and complicated planning system. And Labour may be the party that can do something about that. Maybe.
Where could this budding relationship go wrong? What's likely to be the pinch point if Labour do get into power?
I don't know how to answer that question. There are so many ways in which things could go wrong. But one important thing I think they're trying to do is they're trying to get more private finance into public projects. And they're nibbling around at the idea of the private finance initiatives, bringing businessmen to fund private projects. Now, that went on under Gordon Brown, under the last Labour government, and it was hailed as this new great third way breakthrough, and it went very wrong. Business ripped off a lot of public projects, and a lot of public projects collapsed in sort of calamitous circumstances. So many people, not least workers and trade unionists, turned violently against PFI. Now, I think PFI is going to come back. It will come back in a very new form, under new badges and new names. But what Labour claims is that the problem with PFI in the past was that it was badly managed. Well, and that they can manage it better in the future. Well, I'm not. That's a big promise. They may be right, but if things go wrong, they tend to go very, very wrong. And if that's so central to what the Labour Party is offering, what are they left with?
So that was our Bloomberg opinion columnist, Adrian Wooldridge.
Well, that's it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe. Give it 5 stars so that other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
This episode was produced by Tiwa Adebayo. Our audio engineers were Marufa Lassame and Sean Guastamacchia. I'm Stephen Carroll.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. And we'll be back with more on Monday. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.